Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
When I first took up with my cousins, Jesse and Frank, I was on the run same as them. They were young, full of spit and fire. They'd thrown in with Quantrill's guerrilla forces and already learned to slip around by the skin of their necks while I still worked with Pa, tending the fields and handling horses. By the time we met up, they were miles ahead of me when it came to living on the run. Riding under a black flag had taught them some hard lessons. Getting caught meant death, stretching rope with their toes pointing to the ground. No trial, no nothing. It was a plain and simple fact. Knowing it kept them sharp-eyed and lean. Myself, I'd had the misfortune of killing a Yankee soldier over a horse swap. And though the killing was self-defense, I didn't stick around to explain. Since Kentucky was a neutral state, that is, being kicked back and forth between Sherman's Yankees and Hunt Morgan's rebel forces, you could stumble into more trouble in 2 minutes than you could crawl out of in 100 years. So I lit out of Kentucky late at night on a freight train in the dead of winter with a broken jaw, 4 copper pennies, and a wrinkled up letter in the pocket of Pa's old Mackinaw. Had it not been for killing that soldier, I would have played out my life helping Pa turn 40 acres of dark earth into corn and tobacco. I would have done so proudly, but it just wasn't meant to be. I never knew that young soldier's name or much else about him. He was a big old Irish boy, bad-tempered and dumb as a stump. The truth is, I had cheated him a little on the price, but that's just horse trading. It was nothing worth killing or dying over, and I knew it. When I saw he wasn't happy with the trade, I even gave him back his money and the receipt for his horse just to avoid trouble. But then, as I turned to walk away, all of a sudden, he jumped me from behind. It was just the two of us in that livery stable, and he was fighting like a man out to settle a dispute. I knew right off that he meant to kill me, and he would have. Just as I staggered out of the livery stable, my Pa ran up to me, looped my arm across his shoulder, and pulled me into an alley beside the mercantile building.
Listen to me.
Pa helped me out of my bloody coat and into his warm Mackinaw.
It don't matter where you go, just go. If they catch you, they'll hang you.
He took off his slouch hat and shoved it down on my head. I needed to think, but my thoughts were addled. All I could picture was a blue uniform and hard knuckles pounding my face. I remembered wrapping my hands around a pick handle somehow, and to this day I recall the sound of it slicing through the air as I swung it again and again.
Who did this? Where is he?
They're coming. Get out of here.
My horses.
Damn them horses. That's what got you into this mess. Now go.
I took off through the alley out of town. I glanced back once, saw Pa slip into my blood-spattered coat, and I wondered why he did it. It was only when I reached the woods outside of town and heard the volley of rifles that I realized Pa had given his life to save me.
Graphic Audio presents Ralph Cotton's Chester Nash. Narrated by Dylan Lynch. With performances by Michael John Casey, Tim Carlin, Tracy Lynn Oliveira, Eric Messner, David Coyne, Patrick Bussink, Richard Rowan, Danny Gavigan, Terrence Aselford, David Jordan, Yasmin Toison, Scott McCormick, Ken Jackson, Nick DePinto, Christopher Graybill, Alexander Strain, Mark Halpern, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Stephen Carpenter, Tim Getman, Joe Brack, Jeff Allen, James Konacek, Matthew McGee, Michael Glenn, Tim Pabone, Evan Casey, Casey Platt, Richard Cutting, Nanette Savard, and Mort Shelby. Chester Nash, number one, While Angels Dance.
The letter in Pa's Mackinaw was from my Aunt Zerelda Samuel, Frank's and Jesse's mother, and the only kin who'd kept in touch since Ma's death. She'd written to Pa to tell him they'd moved to Nebraska territory because of the war. All I could think of that night was to find my kinfolk as quickly as I could. I needed help, my jaw being broken, and I needed a place to settle in and put the violence behind me. I knew nothing else to do but hop trains, sleep in haylofts, and suck eggs when I could steal a few here and there. I must have been a sorry sight the day I showed up at the Samuels front yard, but Aunt Zerelda, or Ma Samuel as she has to be called, took me in and cared for me like I was one of her own.
Look here, Doc. He looks enough like Jesse to be his brother.
Old Doc, Jesse's and Frank's stepfather, was a good hand at mending and healing. And as soon as I got my strength back and rested a couple of days, he went to work, cutting and cracking and realigning my face. When he'd finished, he'd carved a small chunk of wood, fitted it between my teeth to hold my jaws slightly open, and tied a strong sling around my face from under my chin to the top of my head. I went 3 weeks bound that way, but it was worth it. Except for a lump of crooked bone that still pains me in cold weather, old Doc did a fine job repairing my jaw. The day he removed the sling, I spat out the chunk of wood and I worked my jaw carefully. Doc tipped my head back and studied my face through his spectacles.
That ain't perfect, but you'll soon be able to chew, cuss, and spit tobacco. Can't ask for more than that, can you?
Reckon not.
I touched my jaw carefully while examining it in a handheld shaving mirror. I glanced up at Doc and managed a stiff grin. Living on stew, tea, and molasses until I could bite down on something solid, I lay around like a sore cat for another 5 or 6 weeks before I ever met my cousins. With the war pressing hard on the Southern regulars, guerrilla forces shouldered more and more of the fighting. Quantrill's men were so heavily pressed along the border that Jesse and Frank only slipped home now and then. I could tell it troubled Ma Samuel, her boys off fighting and she and old Doc forced off their land in Missouri because of the evacuation order, Order 11. They called Order 11 the Devil's Prayer, for it ran decent folk out of Cass, Bates, and Jackson counties and left their homes and holdings at the mercy of Redlegs, Yankees, and thugs. But the Samuels were a strong family, closely knit. And hard-pressed as they were, they never whimpered. They hung on and made do. I have a soft spot a mile wide when it comes to my kin. I always did. So no matter what's said of the James brothers and their defense, they were just what times turned them into. No better, no worse. True, they could be cruel as a killing frost outside our own circle. But to our own kind, our brothers in arms, Frank and Jesse James were the kind of friends you'd willingly die for, because you knew they would do the same for you without batting an eye. And that's the long and short of it. Until news of my being at the Samuel Farm reached Jesse and Frank through the grapevine, they had probably forgotten they had a cousin over in Kentucky. When they heard of my presence, they approached me cautiously. I didn't know till Frank told me about it months later. They'd watched the house for days, leery of a trap. When they did venture in, it was sudden and quiet. I'd been drawing a fresh bucket of water from the well.
Let me give you a hand, cousin.
I spun around to face Frank James. He stood so close I could see the tiny veins in his eyes. Frank could lock on your eyes like a coiled viper. And though I learned to overcome it in time, that day at the well, off guard, I just stood there staring, dumbfounded by the sudden appearance of this stranger with a friendly smile. And behind him, less than 15 feet, not one rider, but six. They'd slipped in as quiet as smoke and sat atop their horses looking hard-eyed and evil.
You seem a little tense, cousin.
Frank reached past me and hefted the bucket in his left hand without taking his eyes from mine.
They're not working you too hard, are they?
When he stepped back with the water bucket, I saw the brass framed Colt come down from my chest. I couldn't answer. I just stared back and forth between Frank and the others, truly stunned. Either I'd gone stone deaf, or this bunch had just materialized out of the morning mist. The riders sat watching me with eyes like gun sights. Then, without turning from Frank and the others, I knew that someone else had crept in. Knowing it, I felt like a lapdog stalked by a pack of timberwolves. Apparently, this bunch could slip around as they pleased. Frank smiled as his pistol disappeared beneath his frock coat.
Come around here, Jesse. Meet our cousin.
So you're Justin Nash.
I watched Jesse circle the well and rein his bay gelding between me and the others. Unlike Frank, who could stare in your eyes till your nose bled, I noticed Jesse couldn't keep his eyes still for a second. His eyes searched everything around him, pinned everything in its place, and checked back warily as if to see what might have changed.
I hear you've been hiding out here a while.
Jesse leaned down slightly and stared me straight in the eyes. I noticed our striking resemblance and wondered for a second if one of our fathers hadn't jumped the fence some years back.
That makes you an outlaw, doesn't it?
He reached down a gloved hand and smiled.
I reckon it does.
I reached my hand to Jesse's. Behind him, the others seemed to ease down in their saddles. Jesse saw how closely I watched them, and he nodded toward them over his shoulder.
They're kind of a loud bunch, ain't they?
Yeah.
Frank reached over and slapped me on the back. It might seem strange that after taking the precautions of watching the house and checking me out before making their presence known, once they rode in, looked me in the eye, and shook my hand, they took me at face value, no questions asked. But that's how it was in them days of bitter madness during the great civil conflict. You learn to size a feller real quick. If he was a friend, you could tell it in his eyes. And if he shook your hand, you could tell if he meant it. I reckon Jesse and Frank must have seen all they needed to know about me that day by the well. And I learned a lot about Jesse that day by shaking his hand. Jesse's handshake had been strong, but cautious. As if any second his hand might disappear, leaving you holding nothing but air. Over the years, I'd come to learn that's how it was with Jesse. His handshake fit him from the ground up. As the days went past, what time we weren't fishing along Gittle Creek or mending fence around the cattle pasture, we gathered by the barn and bet on horseshoes.
Ring it on there, cousin!
I eased forward a step and let the horseshoe slide up from my hand in a low arch. My pitch spun around the spike and hung there.
Damn it, this is bull malarkey. I hate a liar.
Frank and I had suckered Cole and Jim Younger into a game and beat them four in a row.
Pay up and quit belly aching.
Cole pointed his finger at me.
Your cousin lied. He said he never played wall bangers.
Don't blame me. He's your cousin, too. Any lying he does must come from your side of the family. Everybody knows that Jameses don't lie.
Yeah.
Cole snatched the horseshoes off the wall.
And fish don't defecate underwater.
In the weeks before joining the squad, I'd met my other cousins, Cole, Bob, and Jim Younger. Cole rode with another squad, but when he heard Frank and Jesse were at the Samuel Farm in Rulo, he rounded up his brothers and came to visit. Four of the six riders who'd surrounded me at the well drifted back south once they saw everything was on the up and up. The two who stayed were Ed and Clell Miller, longtime friends of Jesse and Frank. Of an evening, we sat on the front porch, passing around a jug of whiskey and talked way into the morning. Listening to Jesse and Frank, I soon realized they were fairly well educated, but they never showed off their book learning like some fellers might. I reckon the war had taught them a confidence of mind that was beyond any need for fancy trimmings. Frank had a way of studying a situation and molding it to suit his purpose, like a potter working heavy clay. Jesse was the opposite. Headstrong and forceful. He would rather knock something down than figure how to go around it. Watching them, you could tell that either of them would be missing something without the other. Yet together, if you looked real close, you could see their minds clicking as one, like two wheels in a clock. One morning in early spring, Jesse stood behind me in the barn while I wrapped a liniment poultice around his horse's hind leg.
Think that's the problem, huh?
I'd tapped a rising on the horse's leg with a sharp knife and squeezed fluid and pus into a small bucket. I stopped when the yellow fluid turned red with blood and pressed on the poultice.
No, Jesse, this horse has a crooked spine. His leg is just swollen from the pressure.
I had noticed, but I think you're right.
I know I am. I can look at a horse and tell you what he had for supper.
So you're that good with horses, huh?
I know horses like the devil knows sin.
Is that a fact?
Yep, it is.
I turned back to the poultice.
Before I got in trouble, I did pretty good buying and selling. I even picked and delivered them. If For a price, of course. Fact is...
I glanced around and noticed Jesse was gone. 3 days later, Jesse, Frank, and I watched the mended horse run in the corral.
I don't see a thing wrong.
You have to look real close to know what you're looking for.
Come on, I don't believe it. There ain't a thing wrong with that horse's back.
No, cousin is right. I never noticed it myself till he pointed it out.
So, cousin's a horse man.
He's a hell of a horse man.
I bet he knows horses like the devil knows sin.
He can smell a horse's fart and tell what it had for supper. For a price, of course.
Frank turned to me.
You want to show us how you do that, cousin?
Both you go to hell.
One evening, I rode with Clell Miller to pick up a jug of whiskey over near Rulo. Folks called the place the Three Torches Tavern. It was nothing more than a plank shack and a clearing sitting beside a barn and a water trough. We heard pistol shots earlier, but thought nothing of it till we neared the clearing.
Don't go in there!
Clell and I swung our horses off the road as the owner of Three Torches came crawling through the brush. His face was chalk white. A wet streak circled his crotch and covered most of his pants leg.
It's a slaughter.
What's happened?
There's a crazy man in there. Thank God you came along. He killed one and is about to kill two others. They got him trapped in the barn, but they won't hold him long.
One man's dead? That's the slaughter?
I mean it, mister. It's terrible.
Who has him trapped?
Two fellers that was with the one he shot. I don't know none of them. They just drifting in.
I'll handle this.
Think it's all right?
Sounds just like a drunken brawl.
We galloped 100 yards and stopped at the edge of the clearing. I didn't even have a pistol. Clell drew his rifle from his scabbard, and we eased our horses forward.
I don't know, Clell. Maybe we ought to...
You worry too much.
Suddenly, a rifle shot hit the water trough. Two men with rifles lay hunkered against the trough, and an arm hung over the edge, dripping blood. At the other end of the trough, two boots stuck up, bobbing in the water. When the men heard our horses, they spun toward us for a second, then took off running.
I'll be damned, sure is a shy bunch around here.
That's close enough.
We were close enough to see the dead man swaying in the water. Water turned red with blood. His eyes were open wide and severely crossed, as if trying to stare into the bullet hole between them. I'd stopped when the voice told us to, but Clell ignored it and moved over to the trough.
I've never seen a man's eyes open this wide or cross this bad in my life. Come here, you gotta see this.
I can see from here.
You can come out now. They've gone.
Where'd they go?
Hell, I don't know. Texas, I guess. They got any sense.
The barn door opened slowly.
Don't try any far-handedness.
A stranger in a bowler hat and a buckskin shirt slowly walked out of the barn.
We're just here for a jug.
Clell leaned his rifle against the water trough. I opened my Mackinaw slowly to show I had no weapon. The stranger watched us as he walked to a horse tied beside the shack and brought it back with him.
Why'd you cross his eyes?
He was a card cheat.
That's a lie! You weren't even playing cards!
The owner stood partly hidden around the corner of the shack. We glanced toward him, then back to the stranger. He hooked his thumb in his belt near his gun handle.
Well, if we had it, he would have. He just looked like a cheat. So why take a chance?
Good point.
When we got in our jugs and before heading back to the farm, we sat atop a low rise with the stranger. He ate some dried shank that Clell took from his saddlebags and drank a long drink of whiskey behind it.
Ask around for Cletus Avery. Tell him I said to find you something to do till we get there.
I'm obliged. My name's Jack Smith. My friends call me Quiet Jack.
Why?
I've known that man for near on half of my life, and I never got an answer to that question.
Think he'll do it?
Oh, yeah, he'll show up. I know his type. He's on the run from something. He'll think about it for a while and figure he's better off with us on his own. He'll fit right into the border fighting.
We turned our horses and started away from the woods.
What's it like down there? The war?
You know how to find out, don't you?
On our next trip to the Three Torches Tavern, Jesse, Frank, Cole, Clell, and I reined up at the edge of the clearing as Jesse held up his hand and nodded toward two finely trimmed horses hitched to the front of the shack. Cole glanced away from the horses and out across the woods.
Damn it, my partifus needs attending. I think I'll go lie under a tree and take care of it.
He slipped away and disappeared into the woods.
Does that work?
We coaxed our horses across the clearing.
No, but it takes his mind off it.
The hell's a partifus, anyway?
I slipped down from my saddle and half-hitched my reins to the porch post. Inside the Three Torches, the owner's finger came up, pointing at Clell and me as I closed the door behind us.
There's who you need to talk to. They was here that day. Sure was.
Two well-dressed men wearing dusters and bowler hats turned toward us from the bar, eyeing the four of us with disregard, the way big stags size up a string of young bucks. Even with Frank, Jesse, and Clell wearing sidearms in full view, I reckon of these two, we look like farm boys on a night out. We sidled down the bar.
You, boy.
Clell leaned back from the bar and put his finger to his chest.
Yeah, you.
Then he glanced past Clell at me.
You too, both of you. Step over here right now. I want to talk to you.
I started to walk to them, but Clell put his hand up, stopping me.
Well, we can. Our feet won't reach.
I don't want no trouble in here.
The two men looked at each other and walked toward us. The taller of the two stopped less than 3 feet from Clell. The other stood back and flipped his duster behind his holster.
No trouble. Not if they tell me about the man doing the shooting here the other day.
Jesse and Frank leaned against the bar.
Bring us a jug.
Frank stared down, picking his thumbnail. I stood next to Clell, tensed and watching.
What about him?
You know him?
No.
Ever see him before?
No.
See him since?
Uh-uh.
Clell shook his head and turned away as the owner set a jug and 4 wooden cups on the bar.
That ain't true! You all rode out in here together!
In a flash, Jesse's hand shot out, caught the owner by his hair, and slammed his face on the bar. In the same second, Clell and Frank spun around with their pistols drawn and cocked. Clell's long-barreled Colt jammed up under the taller man's chin. Frank held his pistol at arm's length, the end of the barrel an inch from the other man's temple. The two men froze.
Don't you wish you were home right now?
With his free hand, Clell reached out and flipped the taller man's gun from his holster and pitched it to me. Not sure what to do, I cocked it and pointed it at the man's chest.
You young men are making a big mistake. We're trackers, manhunters. There's 3 more of us out in the woods. They're mad dogs. You don't have a chance.
Jesse turned the owner loose. He slid back off the bar, leaving a smear of blood and broken teeth.
You couldn't track dogs, Scat, if it was on your shoes. That's our cousin out there. He eats mad dogs. He's taking care of his part of us.
Jesse glanced toward me and winked.
Why don't you go help him with the horses?
I hesitated a second, uncocked the .44 and laid it on the bar. I wanted to say something. Something about these two men. I knew that after I left, they were going to kill them. And I felt I should stop it somehow. I looked at the men and felt a sickness crawl across my chest.
What's the matter? Can't you handle your partifus?
When Cole and I returned with the string of 3 horses, the tavern was ablaze. Through the smoke and fire, I caught a glimpse of 2 bodies lying on the floor and had to turn my head from the sight of it.
Christ, Jesse, why?
I looked at the drawn faces of my cousins and watched the flames glitter in their eyes. They stood silent, expressionless. Near the water trough, the owner lay huddled in the dirt, his hands trembling against his bloody face. Jesse walked to the finely trimmed horses without saying a word. Taking down a feed sack that hung from a saddle horn, he walked back to where I sat watching from atop a gray gelding and turned the bag upside down. In a cloud of bloody sawdust, a human head fell to the ground.
Whoa!
I jerked back so quick the horse almost bolted from under me.
Holy God!
This is how they take in prisoners. Before you judge us, cousin, get to know the enemy. That's Curly Hayes and Max Dupree in there. Today they were looking for somebody else. Tomorrow it might have been us.
Jesse stepped up into his saddle and gigged his horse to the water trough. He stared down at the owner of the Three Torches Tavern.
Be out of here before the smoke clears. Learn to keep your mouth shut the next place you settle.
He swung his horse around and motioned us toward the woods. We fell in behind him, single file. The day Jesse, Frank, and the Millers left the Samuel farm, I turned gut restless and caught myself walking around the yard kicking at dirt clods. It simply vanished before dawn without saying a word. Instead of fishing or pitching shoes, I spent the day sharpening plow blades while old Doc Samuels stayed busy at the grinding wheel. By supper time, I sat on the porch step feeling lonesome, restless, and left out. I looked up and saw Doc Samuel walking toward me with a sawed-off shotgun hanging from his hand. At the same time, as if planned, past him and past the shed, I saw Frank come riding out of the woods leading a tall chestnut gelding. Frank rode up, stopped, and handed me the gelding's reins. From inside his duster, he pulled out a .36 caliber pistol and pitched it to me butt first. Catching it in surprise, I studied it a second and looked up at him. Then old Doc came up beside me and handed me the sawed-off. The barrel felt warm from the grinding wheel. When I took the shotgun, Doc just turned and walked away. Frank folded his forearms across the saddle.
Clell says you're wanting to ride with us.
I'd never said a word about it to Clell. He must have seen it tugging at me that first night near Rulo. I'd thought about it since then, but I'd never brought it up. After what had happened in Kentucky, I'd surely seen enough death and violence to last a lifetime. Killing that soldier and losing my pa bore heavy on me. And before I met Frank and Jesse, the Youngers and the Millers, I'd gone around in fear, expecting something terrible to happen at any second. But somehow, when Frank and Jesse arrived, my fear disappeared as if overcome by their great air of confidence. Around them and the Millers, I felt bold. And once they were gone, I wondered if fear would return. I hated what had happened the other night at the tavern. But after seeing that severed head, I felt it was justified.
Don't let it tug at you. Before I joined Quantrill, I pulled a hitch with the regulars. After Centralia, I was a year blowing the smell from my nose. All I wanted to do was come home and read Shakespeare. The killings all around us. It came and found me, same as it found you way over in Kentucky.
I'm no soldier.
Nobody is, starting out. I hear you're a hell of a horse, man. That'll get you a long ways.
Taking hold of the saddle, I swung up easy, facing away from Frank. I nodded to Frank and pulled my pa's slouch hat lower on my forehead. We rode our horses through the front gate with the sawed-off across my lap in the evening air, feeling cool against my mended jaw.
Big world, ain't it, cousin?
I hooked the gelding forward without answering, and we swung south. I never looked back that night, not once. Not until we disappeared across the creek deep into the woods, headed for the Missouri border.
Dingus! Damn it!
Old Cletus reined up hard from a dead run, his spotted horse rearing sideways and kicking up chunks of earth. I had to swing my horse away to keep him from sliding into us.
Jesus, boy! You trying to get killed?
Ahead in the distance, Southern regulars fought the Yankee infantry hand to hand.
What the hell are you doing out here?
I'm looking for the Maddens.
Forget the Maddens. Come on.
The woods to our right came alive with dark figures and long black coats. A slug tore into Cletus's horse. As it went down, I caught Cletus by his coat sleeve, and he swung up behind me. I quickly turned my gelding and galloped across the stretch of flatland and up across a little rise.
Where you going?
The Maddens are pinned down over there. They've got our string of horses.
We topped the low rise and headed down.
Forget them and damn the horses. Frank said get you and get back before he pulls out.
I reined up, turning the gelding in short, wild circles, searching in all directions, unsure of my next move.
Do something, damn it!
50 yards behind us, on the other side of the low rise, the Jayhawkers had mounted and started forward.
By God, I'll get off and walk!
Hang on!
Kicking the gelding forward, we bellied down toward a creek bed 30 yards ahead.
Yee-haw! Damn him!
I glanced back over my shoulder, then leaned low against my horse's neck. His coarse mane slapped at my face.
Pull out near the woods. I'm hoping they follow us in there.
The squad's in there?
Damn right.
The riders must have sensed a trap. They had fallen away by the time we topped the creek bank and slipped into the woods. 10 yards in, the gelding was winded and slung his head.
You've got got some tall splaining to do, boy.
Raymond Clare walked forward as Cletus slid down from behind me. Before I could speak for myself, old Cletus turned quickly and slammed hard into Clare.
Not to you, he don't.
Clare staggered back and threw his hand to his pistol. He looked dumbfounded by the speed and strength of old Cletus.
I'll shove it up in your gullet.
Raymond Clare's hand jumped away from his holster.
Hold on!
I slid down from my saddle and grabbed Cletus by his coat sleeve.
I'm just trying to hold things together here, that's all.
Clare backed away.
The Maddens are dead. Dingus was going to help him. I stopped him.
That's good enough for me.
Clare kept his hand still chest high as he backed farther away.
I'm just looking out for all of us.
Yeah, I bet.
Every group has an asshole. Ours was Clare. He turned tail back into the woods.
Something's bad wrong with that man. You watch him, Dingus. Watch him close.
Cletus's brother Parker came out from behind a tree, letting down the hammer on his rifle.
And don't ever grab my arm when I'm fixing to kill a son of a bitch. You got that?
Yeah.
You got that?
Yeah, I got it.
Cletus and Parker turned and started off to the coffee pot.
That little Dingus saved my rump out there. I'll never live it down.
I was lean as a waxed rope when Jesse and Frank took me into the squad. Like any farm boy, I was broad-handed and foot-thick from hopping clods and wrestling a plow, and plain dumb in some ways from staring at a mule's hide from daylight to dark. But when it came to horses, picking, breaking, training, and even stealing them, I had what you call a natural talent. I did know horses like the devil knows sin, and, be it a blessing or a curse, it was my gift for riding stock that carved me out a place among the guerrilla forces. For a long time, they called me Dingus, an unknown. Cousin Jesse bore that name before I joined. He didn't mind giving it up. It no longer fit him, anyway. By that time, he and Frank were well-known squad leaders in the guerrilla circle. I still wore my pa's slouch hat the day I joined the squad. It was two sizes bigger than my head, and Ma Samuel had sheared my hair clean to the scalp right at brim level before I left the farm. I reckon my age and appearance said little for me. I rode in the camp with Jesse and Frank.
Where the hell'd you find this scarecrow?
I saw it right away and bristled up like a yard hound. But he just glared at me and laid his hand on his pistol.
Go easy. This is my kin.
Claire's hand slipped away from the pistol.
Yeah, and you ain't.
Clare backed away with a nervous smile. Even then, my cousins had a reputation. They could turn cold as blue steel and dangerous as a skillet full of dynamite. Like any young man new to a job, I'd been nervous and overeager at first. Aside from handling horses, most things I did with uncertainty. The first Yankees I shot caused me to puke up my guts, and I was squeamish about stripping belongings from their bodies. Seeing all this, Raymond Clare right away took me for either a coward or an idiot. But I was neither.
Fire!
I bolted up from the ground, my knees trembling, same as always from that terrible dream. It was 2 weeks after the death of the Maddens. I dozed off against my saddle in the shelter of the woods near the backwater swamp of Dog Creek. Shaking my head, I glanced around the campsite and saw Raymond Clare standing beside the fire with an ugly grin. I rubbed my face, ignored him, and walked to the fire.
What's the matter? Soldiers chasing you in your sleep?
I bent down without answering and drew a cup of coffee. Whatever Raymond Clare had against me ran deeper than I could fathom. I'd written him off as a rotten son of a bitch and stayed away from him best I could. But with Jesse and Frank away from camp and the Averys out on watch, it was just Clare and me. And I wasn't going to take a nickel's worth of his overbearing guff. I stood up with my coffee as Clare circled the fire toward me. I tried to go around him and walk back to my saddle, but he stepped in front of me.
You got boogeyman chasing you, don't you, boy? Don't you?
He shoved me.
Huh, boy?
I dropped the coffee.
I'll kill you, you son of a bitch!
As I threw my punch, he stepped aside and caught me by my wrist. Twisting me backwards in an arm lock, he had me. Had me cold.
Killing a few hawkers at Goose Creek don't make you nothing in my book.
He tightened harder around my throat.
I'll gut you like a hog.
When I hit the ground, I tried reaching for my pistol, but my right arm was so weak, and twisted. It wouldn't move. As I struggled to pull myself across the ground, he started drawing a 10-inch dagger from its sheath. As Claire spun to face the awaiting rifle, I looked past him and saw Jesse pointing it straight at his chest. Frank stepped to the side and walked a wide circle around the fire.
Hope we ain't interrupting something here.
Claire let the half-drawn dagger slide back into the sheath.
Having a time funning with the new man here. That's all. Hell, Frank, you know how I kid around.
Cletus and Parker Avery came running in. Frank glanced at them and they stopped suddenly. Old Cletus's eyes shot toward Claire, glittering in the firelight like warning labels on a bottle of poison. Jesse stood bone still, with his rifle leveled and cocked. Frank spoke down to me without taking his eyes off Claire.
Anything to it, cousin?
There ain't nothing to it, Frank.
I struggled to my feet with my hat in my left hand. I slapped dust from my shirt.
It's settled.
It's settled?
It's settled.
Frank nodded over his shoulder. Jesse tilted the rifle up and let down the hammer. My arm still ached as we broke camp and headed out across the flatlands. Seeing how bad I wanted Claire's hide, Frank sent me off with Cletus Avery to gather fresh horses. It was good thinking on Frank's part. I was under control, but just barely. And Quantrill had a low tolerance for fighting among his troops. Had Frank or Jesse shot Claire when he was about to knife me, it would have been a different story. But if I threw down on Claire right now after saying it was over, I would be the one at fault.
That's how Quantrill would call it. Should have had us kill him right then.
No, Frank. When the time comes, I'll call him out on my own, face to face, and I'll kill the son of a bitch. What will Quantrill think of that?
Face to face, huh?
Damn right.
Guns blazing and blood flying, right, cousin?
I ain't afraid.
I know you ain't, cousin.
William Clark Quantrill was no saddle trash like some guerrilla leaders I could mention. He was strict, but fair. As guerrilla-style fighting goes, there was none to match the group of fighting men assembled under his command. Most of them were like I was coming in, greener than goose squat. But learning Quantrill's hit-and-run methods of warfare turned us all into crack troops. We were able to wreak havoc and misery on the best fighting force the North threw at us. The people of Missouri and the Ozarks proudly called us the boys, and for the longest time, we shouldered the war along the Kansas-Missouri border on our own. Even when Southern forces pulled back, we fought on like demons, foraging food, stealing ammunition, eating, sleeping, and fighting on the run, living on horseback no different than wild Indians. Enemy forces feared us worse than a blanket full of rattlesnakes. We asked no mercy and showed none in return. Cletus's and my job that night was to pull up fresh mounts and meet the squad at Dance Mill the next evening. We sat atop our horses and watched the rest of the squad disappear into the woods.
Don't let Frank get you rattled, Dingus. Listen to him and you'll learn something. You might even stay alive long enough to know why you learned it.
Cletus and I turned our horses and crept back through the brush country into Cass County. I stayed in the woods as Cletus rode down before daylight to contact our supplier and pay for the horses. 20 yards out, he disappeared into the silver mist that shrouded the bottomland. So thick was the morning mist that had a regiment of soldiers been there, I wouldn't have known it. I slipped down from my saddle and searched the mist till my eyes blurred. I couldn't see a blasted thing. The second I sensed something was wrong, but before I could swing up onto my saddle, I was surrounded by at least a half dozen cocked rifles. It was the first of many times I would meet up with Daniel Zanon, then captain of the Kansas Free Militia.
Stop right there!
He walked up and threw my hands behind my back. He proceeded to clamp some shackles around my wrists and tighten them up like a ratchet. A sweat-crusted bandana was pulled over my mouth and drawn tight. Rolling onto my back, I looked up at a rifle barrel and the bearded face above it.
Lay real still, and I won't kill you just yet.
Is this all?
That's all we get, Captain. No sign of any others.
Bring him on up.
One of the men threw Cletus Avery to the ground 6 feet away. His hat was gone. A swipe of gray hair hung down between his eyes. Blood trickled from a knot on his forehead. It ran down, spreading into his white beard.
You little sumbitch!
I glanced around to see who he was cussing.
Don't look away, you no-good bastard! You sold us over!
Right then, a boot kicked him in the chest and he rolled into a ball. I lay there stunned, not believing my ears as the group of riflemen closed around us. I thought Cletus had taken too hard a blow on the head, making him talk crazy. But the next thing he said made me realize he was up to something.
You take these bastards of that money, and you'll rot in hell. You'll never see a minute's peace, you Judas bastard.
Somebody dropped two ropes on the ground, both tied in slip knots. This kind of noose wouldn't break your neck. It would choke you to death slow in half an hour or more. I tried to figure what Cletus was getting at about the money. At the time, you couldn't shake enough money from our squad to fill a teacup. Two pairs of hands raised me to my knees, and I got a glance at Zanon's eyes. I could tell he was studying what Cletus said. He reached down and jerked the bandana from my mouth.
You'll burn in hell for telling him!
What money is he talking about?
Zanon backhanded me across my mouth.
What's he talking about, boy?
My mind raced across a dozen lies as I tried to calm down. All that stood between me and death's dark tunnel would be the words from my mouth. If my tongue slipped or my voice wavered, I wouldn't get a second chance. This was for keeps. Staring at the ropes on the ground, knowing one of them would soon squeeze me out of this world, I went blank for just a second.
You tell them nothing, boy!
He took another boot in the ribs.
Thanks for your help, old-timer. Now what about that money, boy?
Don't tell them a damn thing! They're gonna hang us anyway!
Something told me that there was no way in hell I could get both Cletus and myself out of there alive. If I bargained for us both, it was going to look like what it really was, two desperate men trying to save their necks. Whatever his reason, he was giving me a shot at staying alive.
He's talking about $12,000 we pulled loose from an army payroll yesterday over near Findlay.
That's a damn lie. He's lying to save his ass. I made it up about the money.
Shut up, you old son of a bitch. I ain't dying so that Missouri trash can keep my part of the money.
Zanon kneeled down, face level, watching me close.
I heard nothing about a payroll robbery.
I stared him straight in the eyes.
We killed them all. You'll hear about it today when they send riders out to see what happened to it. All they'll find are six bodies rolled off into a gulch.
Zanon stood up slowly and started scratching his beard.
Let's string them up, Captain.
So you're wanting to lead us to the money, is that it?
I don't want to lead you anywhere, but I don't want to hang either.
Nodding his head, Zanon looked at the riders, then back at me.
I can smell an ambush a mile away, and I think that's what this is.
That's what it is. Don't believe this little yellow liar.
A boot hooked him again.
Suit yourself. You saw how many horses he was bringing up. There's only six horses and two of them was for us. There's only four men waiting not more than half a day's ride from here. They're worn out and wounded and sitting on $12,000. All I ask is that you give me part of it and turn me loose for taking you there. And your word that you won't shoot me in the back when I leave.
Zanon stared at me.
What about the old man here?
If you let him go, he'll track me down. Give me a gun and I'll shoot him myself before we leave.
As much as my words sickened me, I was honest about that part. Whether I made it out of this or not, Cletus was gonna die. It would be better me shooting him than leaving him hanging from a tree. That's if I could make myself do it.
But you wouldn't care if we hang him or shoot him. I mean, knowing he'd kill you given a chance.
I don't give a damn how he dies, long as he's dead before we leave here.
I tried to look at Cletus to somehow let him know I was sorry. He just stared at the ground. I reckon he knew if our eyes met, Zanon would see right through us. Zanon pulled me to my feet.
Boys, I don't know if this kid is a liar or a coward or just one greedy poltroon, but for $12,000, let's find out.
They pulled Cletus to his feet, and he lunged at me before they could grab him.
You rotten bastard! It's you who killed me!
As they dragged him away, our eyes met for a split second. I saw it clear as day. The last I remember of old Cletus, his eyes were telling me,
"You done good, boy. You played it all the way."
Then, within minutes, instead of shooting or hanging that poor old man, they hoisted him upside down from an oak branch and built a fire under him. For nearly an hour, They made me stand there watching him burn. And I couldn't dare let on that it bothered me. I'll say this for that old man. Hanging over the crackling flames, he never once yelled out. He jerked and quivered and even bounced up and down some toward the end. But he let out no more than a long, rough growl. It was like he was straining to keep from screaming his lungs out. God love him, I believe he thought I would break down if he carried on. So he hung there and cooked to death. I had no plan when we rode for Dance Mill. I only knew that I was still alive and kicking instead of swinging from a rope. If there were any order on the waiting list to hell, Raymond Clare's name had just dropped a notch. Right then, my only purpose in living was to find a way to kill Zenon as slowly and as painfully as possible, same as he'd done old Cletus. This was big thinking for an unarmed kid under shackle and guard. What happened that morning in the woods, and what was to happen that evening at Dance Mill, would affect my life for a long time to come. Until that evening, nobody had ever heard of Jesse or Frank James, leastwise not outside our circle of guerrilla fighters and sympathizers. As for myself, had it not been for Daniel Zenon, I might have drifted away after the war and never been heard of again. But fate was busy that day, dabbling with the strings of our lives in a way that would take years to untangle. Daniel Zenon had nothing to lose that day, and I knew he wasn't completely taken in by my story. The number one rule of guerrilla fighting is to never give up the location of your squad. Zenon knew if there was $12,000 waiting at Dance Mill, so much the better. He would claim it as his own, and he and his men would keep their mouths shut. If there was no money, he would still get the jump on a squad of Quantrill's men. This was the kind of situation that could turn a cutthroat like Zenon into a popular statesman. However the chips fell, I knew there was nothing waiting for me at Dance Mill but a bullet in the head, or worse. Rounding the bend less than a mile from Dance Mill, I knew that any move I made, I had to make soon. Up ahead, the road would swing down in a wide turn for 200 yards, then double back through the valley beneath us. The mill lay down in the valley. If I could get past the rider on my right and over the edge of the road, I might roll down out of sight and make it to the squad. Well, this was my day for long shots. The edge of the road turned into a steep rock slide that descended 20 yards, then became trees and thick brush. If a man searched for a place to break his neck, he would find none better. But I was desperate. I'd rode docilely all the way, looking whipped and submissive, hoping to catch them off guard. I was still shackled and gagged, and I'd lost Pa's old hat somewhere along the road. There were two riders before me, four behind, and one on each side. The one on my right had a rifle lying across his saddle, pointed at my belly. My reins were lashed to the saddle horn, snug enough for no more than a steady trot, but I knew this chestnut gelding was quick out of the hole. He would jump past a tight rein if I gigged him hard enough. All I needed was to be a little to the right of the animal in front of me. I was tense and ready, even though I looked like a cowering dog. Watching the side-to-side sway of the rider in front, I waited till he veered slightly left at the same time as my gelding veered right. Just before the horses swayed again, I braced tight and nailed the spurs to him. The gelding bolted forward so fast he ricocheted off the front rider and plowed up onto the horse beside me. Barely keeping saddle, a rifle shot blazed past my face. Suddenly, my gelding reared up. For a second, we were on top of the horse and rider. Then the four of us went off down the rock slide, end over end. We tumbled and bounced like a bucket of bones. I was in midair, sailing straight for a tree, when the horse and rider bounced over me and slammed into it first. Glancing off the horse, I rolled another 10 yards into the woods through briars and down timber. Deeper down the hillside, I realized the gunfire wasn't just Zenon's men shooting at me. Without knowing it, I'd led them into a trap and jumped out right as it snapped shut. I clawed and dug my way back up the hill, still working against my shackles. I got to where the rider lay half pinned under his horse. They were both dead. I jerked a six-shot revolver from a holster under his arm. I cocked the six-shooter and headed up toward the road. I pictured Zenon hanging upside down over a fire with his ears melting like hog fat. I had him, by God. I had him good. Two of Sinone's men came backing over the edge of the road, firing at the other side. They didn't look behind them, and they didn't get another chance. They tumbled down the rocks like bundles of rags. Then, before I could get another 10 yards up the hill, Sinone backed over the edge the same way.
Captain!
He spun facing me. I wanted him alive and kicking somewhere deep in the woods overlooking a foggy bottomland. Still young, learning the hard way, I'd figured wrong. Seeing I had him covered, I thought he would give up and drop his gun. It was my mistake. When he turned, his gun was up and ready for fire. Realizing I couldn't take him alive, I pulled the trigger 3 times, but heard the heart-sickening sound of empty chambers. My second mistake was not checking the gun when I grabbed it. Sinone stepped down toward me, wearing a crazy grin. At 10 feet, he raised the gun level to my head and took aim. I squinted my eyes shut and told my soul goodbye. I could sense where the bullet would hit me, almost feel it tearing through my forehead. Something warm and wet stung my face as Sinone slammed past me and rolled downhill into heavy brush. I blinked and saw Raymond Clare sidestepping down the hill. Smoke curled from his double-barrel shotgun as he stopped 5 feet from me. He bent down, taking up Zanone's pistol. I stood dumbfounded for a second, trying to get a hold on what was real and what wasn't. My face was splattered with Zanone's blood. I wiped my shirt sleeve across my eyes. Claire pitched me the shotgun and motioned toward the brush.
Go in there and make sure he's dead.
Not wanting to make another mistake that day, I hesitated a second. Breaking open the shotgun, I glanced down, checking the chambers. From one, a gray haze seeped out into the air. In the other, a shell glinted in the evening sunlight. I looked up at Claire and saw him smiling. It was the first time he'd ever been friendly toward me. He glanced at Zanone's pistol in his hand, checking the chamber.
He nearly got you.
If you hadn't come along, you would have killed me. You saved my life.
Oh, you'd have done the same for me.
He stepped forward and nudged me on the shoulder like an old friend.
Now get in there. You make sure he's dead. Are you all right? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I snapped the shotgun shut.
I'm all right. I just wanted to thank you first.
Oh, think nothing of it.
I blew most of Claire's head clean off. I'd made 2 mistakes in a row, and something told me that turning my back on Raymond Clare would be my 3rd and final. If I'd misjudged him, it was a mistake I preferred to live with and wonder about than to die of and know for certain. There was no reason for him to have changed toward me that soon after wanting to carve me open like a Christmas goose. Something told me when he reached for Zanone's gun and checked the chamber that he planned to roll me over and say it was Zanone's doing. Right or wrong, I'd think no more about it. He could sort it all out in hell. I picked up Zanone's gun and stuck it down in my waist belt. My Geldon was up from the fall. I walked over to him, took up the reins, and checked him out good. He wasn't hurt from the fall, but I could have laid half my little finger in the gash I made with my spurs.
Hey, Dingus! How are you making out?
I looked over to see Parker Avery was the one calling down to me.
I'm all right. Tell Frank everything is settled.
I would not know until months later, but while I stood there yelling up the hill to Parker Avery, Daniel Sinone listened as he crawled through the brush like a wounded rat. I was bone-tired and so glad to be alive and back with the squad, I forgot about Sinone for a second and began working my way up the rock slide to the road. By the time I topped the edge of the road, 4 corpses had been propped up against each other back to back. Parker stepped in beside me and handed me Pa's old hat.
We found this 5 miles back. That's what put us on to you.
He had the strained look of a man asking for news he dreaded to hear. I must have looked like a man with news I hated to tell. Still shackled, I dusted the hat against my leg and dropped it on my head. Your brother Cletus didn't make it.
Well, how did he get it?
Frank rode up here in the conversation. I stopped in the road and gazed from one to the other, then rested my gaze on Frank.
Parker, go down and help bring the other bodies up. We'll talk about Cletus later.
The two of us watched Parker Avery disappear over the edge of the road, then Frank stared back down at me.
How bad was it?
Damn bad. If Parker has to know, I'll tell him, but I'd sooner not talk about it.
You'll have to tell him, but you decide when.
I nodded and stood there silent for a few seconds.
Old Cletus saved your hide, didn't he?
I just looked away.
You came close to bringing that bunch down on us.
Yeah, but I didn't, did I? After what they did to old Cletus, I would have done anything I could to spark a gun battle. But I wouldn't have brought them in on you, that's a fact. Frank locked his eyes on mine, searching for any flaw or hesitation on my part. I held his stare without batting an eye.
You did good, cousin. You showed bold.
All of a sudden, I felt shame at being alive while that old man hung from a tree and burned to death saving me. Long after dark, we quit searching the briar thickets for Zanone's body. I didn't like thinking he might still be alive, but we had tarried long enough in a patrolled area. With the full moon rising high, we rode out single file, 10 yards between us, just inside the woods line. I remained shackled. Apparently, Zanone carried the only key. A light came on in my head at Dance Mill, for after that day I became a different person. Among Quantrill's riders, I felt like a bastard child at a homecoming. Though everybody did their best to make me feel welcome, I didn't think I belonged. But after being captured and nearly hanged, after seeing old Cletus spill open like a steer on a spit, and after head-popping Raymond Clare with that 10-gauge, something in me changed overnight. When my shackles fell to the dirt of my feet, I stared down and felt a shiver go up my back. I rubbed my raw wrists, felt cool air against them, and vowed the only shackles to ever go around me again would be after my heart stopped beating.
I'll die first.
I kicked the shackles away.
Welcome to the war.
I mean it.
I looked up at Frank and the mounted squad.
Damn them all. They'll catch the devil by the horns if they catch me again.
Swinging up into the saddle, I pulled my hat down low to avoid the faces of the squad. Something inside me died at Dance Mill. Frank and the squad must have seen it. I didn't know what it was. Innocence? Gentleness? Something like that, I reckon. Whatever it was, it left a hollowness I would be a long time filling, and even longer in understanding. I glanced at Frank and saw the strangest look on his face, as if there was something he felt he needed to say. But Jesse must have seen it too, and had jumped his horse between us before Frank could speak.
Let's move out!
We swung our horses toward the deep woods. He stopped beside me before riding up front.
It's dog eat dog, cousin. God help us. May the meanest dog win.
Over the next few days, I noticed a difference in how I was treated by the other riders. Before, if I was placed somewhere on lookout, the squad would spend half the time explaining what to do and how to do it. Even then, they would keep coming back checking on me. Now it seemed that when it came my turn to watch, all they needed to do was nod and I was in position. Every night for the next week, Parker Avery managed to be beside me any time we stopped for more than a few minutes. Finally, I sat down beside him and told him the whole story about his brother Cletus. He never said a word. When I was through, he got up and patted my shoulder without speaking. He took a canteen of whiskey and went into the woods. I started after him, but Jesse stopped me.
Leave him be. It's between him and old Cletus.
For the longest time that night, we heard the solid thud of his fist against a tree trunk. Next morning, his hand was swollen and wrapped in a rag. And all the rest of the time I knew him, Parker never mentioned his brother's name again. Nobody mentioned Raymond Clare ever again. Frank knew I'd done him in. Maybe nobody else cared one way or the other. Being from Kentucky, I never really had a calling or purpose in fighting the war. For the people of Missouri and Kansas, the killing and hatred had boiled to such a point that had it not been for the war and the uneasy peace that followed, they'd still be fighting today. Me? I was just following my cousins at a time when I had no direction of my own. I'd overcome my fear at a high price. 12 months of killing had turned me as hard across the chest as drawn cable. I became skilled in using a 10-inch Glades knife I'd taken off a dead man near Memphis. I not only kept our squad fitted with the finest riding stock, I'd learned to sneak up on a Yankee guard and kill him as quietly as a vengeful spirit. That whole year, with the Southern regulars pulling back in defeat, we followed the Bluecoats so close you could smell their feet on a warm night. We slipped around in Cass, Bates, and Jackson counties almost at will, taking what we needed from their camps and burning what we left behind. When we passed wounded columns of Southern regulars along the road, they stared at us in awe, in fear and disbelief, as we rode into the fury they'd left behind. The boys, they whispered under their breath, as if saying it aloud would conjure evil upon them. To acknowledge them in their pitiful state would have brought them shame. So we stared past them, knowing, as well as they, it was their blood and severed limbs, their dying screams and lost hope and honor we would wade through in the fields ahead.
Crossed anybody's eyes lately?
Quiet Jack had slipped through a Red Lake patrol and joined us near Bent Creek. I hadn't seen him since that day near Rulo, but I'd heard he was one of the best of Bloody Bill Anderson's battalion. Clell Miller sent him to us after we lost most of our squad in an ambush.
None that didn't need it. You the squad leader?
From the sound of the distant battle, we'd be waiting all night for it to end.
Yeah, till Jesse or Frank gets back.
Last time I saw you, you wasn't even wearing a gun. Now you're a squad leader?
It's been a busy year. You got a problem with it?
No offense. I just like to know who I'm working for.
From across the low campfire, Parker Avery took a drink of whiskey from a canteen, then passed it to Quiet Jack.
Dingus is straight up. If he wasn't, Frank wouldn't put him in charge.
So you're old Cletus's brother.
Jack took a swig from the canteen and passed it back. Parker just nodded.
I rode with Cletus a while when I first came down here. I hated hearing about him burning up.
We all hated it.
I heard you shot the man that burned him.
No, I didn't shoot him. But I was there when he got splattered by a shotgun.
You saw his body?
No.
Then he might still be alive?
I don't see how. Why are you asking?
I liked old Cletus. If the man that killed him is still alive, I'd love to gut hook him.
I figure he's dead. But even if he ain't, I doubt you'll ever run into him.
Never know. You know what they say. They say all demons meet on the road to hell.
By the end of the year, the Yankees had thrown a strong blockade along our border, making it difficult for us to duck out through the back door, a strip of Arkansas that opened into the Indian nations and on down to Texas. They had us trapped and knew we were tired and dragging. When rumors of Lee's surrender circulated along the border, a lot of fellers just bowed their heads and went home. But we stayed on, and those of us who didn't die in the saddle became the most vicious bunch of gunmen to ever plague the earth.